Thank you so much. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good day, good noon, good night, good dawn, good post-meridian, good anti-meridian, good anti-diluvian, good anti-M, good desk. Welcome to The Long Shot. It is a podcast. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Sean Conroy. My other host, who's always here and is here today, and we are both here, is Amber Kenny. Amber Kenny is here.
Hello.
So glad to see you. I have a lot to get to today, some of which I will...
Let me say something.
No. I'm not saying that. I won't do that. That will not happen. No. I specifically need your help with something.
But oh, no.
Before we even get to that. No. It's nothing okay. Bad. It's nothing. Well, it is bad. I'm a bad person. But other than that.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if I ever told this story in the podcast, but I did tell it in my one-person show I had started to work on before COVID hit. And that show went on possibly permanent hiatus, although I still would like to do something like that. But you came and saw that show, so you may remember this story I told about the day before Christmas vacation, my freshman year of high school. So a few days before that, so this was December of 1943. So we were in the middle of WW2. Mm-hmm. A few days before Christmas vacation, I was in the gym with my class and I bumped into someone, or he bumped into me.
Classic.
And
bully situation.
He got very angry at me and thought that I needed to see him after school so that we could settle once and for all the fact that no one should be bumped. And without getting into the whole story, well, I kind of am getting into the whole story. I went out there. He said, meet me at 3:00. I'm going to kick the shit out of you. And I was like, okay, I'll meet him. I don't think he'll kick the shit out of me, but we'll see what happens. So I met him at 3:00, or I went to meet him at 3:00, and he was not there. And then I came to school the next day, and he was like, where the fuck were you, man? I said, meet me. And I was like, well, I was out there, didn't see you there. One of us is not being truthful. And he was like, 3:00 today, meet me out behind the school. So I went out behind the school. And
why would you go? Like, well, honor?
Yeah, because you're a little boy and you're like, okay, I have to back up the words I never said and the actions I never took. I have to back those things up. Or risk, I guess, risk being called a pussy for the rest of your life.
Worst possible thing.
I mean, it's pretty bad. So I went out again, and that happened 3 days in a row where I went out to meet him and he was not there. And then he would come in the next day and say,
you were like, are you in a different location? Are you talking about a different
school? Well, that's what I eventually decided was the problem, was that. So I took the suburban train to school and he took the subway to school. So I came in from one side and he came in from the other side.
You had a different idea of what the back was.
I assume that's what happened. I don't know. Now, here's another part of the story. Well, I'll get to this part later. But anyway, the fourth day, which, like I said, we had mass that morning and then we were supposed to just go home for Christmas vacation because I went to satanic school. So we had black mass in the morning. And then, so again, he was like, meet me after school. So I went out to the, I guess he said, meet me around the corner by the dumpsters. And so there was no way to confuse who was going to end up where.
Right.
So I went out there and I was just like an innocent little kid from the suburbs who didn't really know a lot about anything. And he was like a tough kid from Staten Island or whatever. And, you know, there we both were in our jackets and ties. And I was like, so we're face to face. There's nobody else around. It's just the two of us.
Was he the same age as you?
Yeah, he was a freshman as well. But I remember I said to him, I was like, I don't really know how to start this. And he just punched me right in the face. That was the beginning of the fight. And my nose immediately just started gushing blood. It was like, and, you know, we tussled for a few moments, but then a car full of seniors came around the corner. They were just leaving. And we both jumped up as if nothing was happening. And they were like, were you guys fighting? And we were both like, no, no, no. We were just hanging out. But of course,
you have like blood
was pouring yeah. from my face. And so they were like, all right, guys, it's Christmas time. You know, you got to shake hands. I mean, you know, this was the Bronx. So they were like, you got to shake hands and say nice things to each other. Then you can be on your way. Let's squash this. It's all over. And so we, you know, we did that.
So wait, so why did you guys both have the instinct to hide what was going on to the
senior? I think because maybe we thought it was a teacher coming, not a group of students, but it was students. So they just made us, you know, apologize to each other. And I really felt like I did not need to apologize because I was basically apologizing for getting punched in the face, right. Which I don't think you should have to apologize for. But anyway.
I'm sorry that my face got in the way of your hand.
I beg your pardon, sir, for the location of my cranium. imagine if the next time I came back to school, he was like, meet me outside and we're going to fight. And I was like, okay. And then I got out there
forever.
And I just got out there and I was like, I don't know how we're supposed to start. And he just punched me in the face. Right. And then we did that again and again and again. And I never, because I feel like if that happened, I would learn self-defense techniques. I would learn I knew how to throw a punch. I just didn't know you were allowed to do that. My grandfather taught me how to punch when I was very little. So I knew how to like guard myself and, you know, jab and cross and uppercut. But imagine I didn't put any of that into practice. And just for years after that, he just came out and punched me in the face till I gushed blood.
Like a Groundhog's Day
right. sort of situation. And I say that because I don't know if you saw Meet the Press this morning. The new host of Meet the Press interviewed former President Donald Trump. And Donald Trump just came out and just punched her in the face and she just gushed blood for like half an hour. And then that was the end of it. So, you know, and the reason I say that is because it's hilarious to me in a very unfunny way that everybody is now talking about, well, the press really needs to figure out how to deal with Donald Trump.
Just stop talking to him.
It's been 8 years of this shit. Yeah.
More than that, technically, because it was Obama.
Right, but he wasn't. Yeah, right. The birtherism thing. But he wasn't a political candidate at that time. It's been since whatever, June of 2015 or whenever he descended the golden escalator or whatever the fuck it was when he paid all those people to stand around and be his fans. But just that the discussion is still after 8 years. What are we supposed to do? We just have to let him say the things he says and not push back. And, you know, he's a presidential candidate, so he deserves a forum.
Yeah, that's tough. I understand that you're speaking in metaphor. What actually happened?
Oh, he just lies constantly about everything. And
she's like, but.
Well, not even that. She just goes on to the next question. You know, there was just no pushback. I mean, maybe a couple of things, but just constant lying about everything. Mm-hmm. The fire hose of falsehoods, the Putin technique of like, nobody knows what reality is because I just say all the, like he dictates his own reality. The story he's telling is not true. It's the story that he wants to be true. And so if he says it out loud, lots of people, because we live in a country full of people, lots of people believe what he says. And they're like, oh, it's true. He did do an incredible job with this and an amazing job with that and built a huge fence and mm-hmm. or sorry, wall.
A fence.
Build that chain link fence. Build that chain link fence.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting now that I think about it. And this is I'm not the first person to make this observation, I'm sure.
Any observation I make has been made by hundreds of people before me.
But so. Followers of Trump seem to take everything he says at face value. Mm-hmm. But anything else, like a fact, it's like, well,
because he has told them that no one is telling the truth but him.
Right.
And the media is all lying, and the elites are all lying, and everybody's out to get
like, what are we doing?
He's just a regular guy who happens to have a golden toilet, you know? Anyway, it was just frustrating, hilarious and frustrating to literally see people going, well, I don't know what they're supposed to do. Like, the press needs to figure out how to interview Donald Trump. And it's like, that would be me after 8 years getting punched in the face for the 9,000th time. I don't know how many days there are in 8 years, not 9,000, 2,400, 2,400th time. And just going, I don't know what to do. Every time I say, how are we supposed to start this? He just punches me in the face. And there's not really anything I can do about that. Well, you could not go out there. You could try to block it. You could punch him first. You could have a fact checker sitting by to say you're not supposed to apologize for being punched in the face. I don't know.
I don't know. I've been saying this for quite some time, but I think like he is just such this his like power source is attention, negative or positive. And I feel like we just have to like cut him off from that.
I think what you're saying is I need to shut up and stop talking.
No. I'm saying he should stop getting meet the press
airtime. Yeah. But that's the flip side of the argument is he is the leading candidate for president of the United States in the Republican Party. I call them the Republicans because
fun.
They are.
That's fun.
Yeah. I just thought of that right now. It's been said hundreds of times by other people before this, but I just thought of it.
Many times, many ways.
But, you know, it is. Yeah. It's fucking insane to me.
The
people are just still going, I don't know what to do. I don't know. I don't know.
This is only quasi-related. There's two TikToks that I've seen recently that I will send your way because they're just like absolutely infuriating. And for me, it was really helpful to have a visual aid, but they're both charts. So I'm about to describe some charts, but the first one is about the wealth distribution in the United States and how like, again, I'll send it to you, but like
not good. I'm assuming it's not good.
Well, like they took the population and they sort of distilled it into 100 people, you know, so that represents doctors and CEOs and blah 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 blah. And so it's like this is what
improvisers.
Correct. This is what the wealth would look like if it was even. Ha 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 ha. That's never gonna happen.
Right.
This is what like the ideal, and you know it.
If you do this specialized kind of work, you get more money. If you do something less specialized.
So yeah, it has like a lower and it goes up.
Right, right.
And and then it's what people think it is, and it is
much
a little sharper.
Higher.
But what it actually is, it's like basically almost everyone is close to poverty, even middle class.
It's an L.
And then the 1% owns so much that it goes off the chart.
Yeah.
I'll send it to you. And it's just like, this isn't good. And one of the statistics they pointed out was that that person, that 1% makes what their average worker at their company would have to work for a month to make what they make in an hour. Mm-hmm. And this isn't like lowest level employee. We're not talking like janitor. Right. average employee. Like, that's so fucked up. Like, this is the problem. And then I saw another one that was the same thing about cost of rent and cost of owning a house versus
like, cost of gum.
No, like increase to salary.
Right.
And it's like they're going the opposite way in such a frustrating way. Like a couple weekends ago, I saw Les Mis, and I just am like,
Time to take to the streets.
I don't know what to do about it, but it is, it feels like that is a core source of a lot of the problems. And because people are so close to not making it, like they're living on such thin ice, that they are easily manipulated by snake oil salesmen. Yeah. And like it feels all related is what I'm saying.
I think you're right. And I think that what people don't understand is that
the guy with the
he's not doing anything to help anybody, you know. He's telling them, and people go, well, he just says what I think. And it's like, no, he doesn't. He doesn't care about anybody. He would immediately push you off a cliff if he needed to, which I would too. I don't like you, sir, but you know.
Well, he supported Trump for a long time.
There are so many things not in your favor. by the way, I just wanted to say that you said this was quasi-related, and I do always like to point out when something is quasi-related that that is the name of the cousin of the Hunchback of Notre Dame. So stupid.
Related. This is my cousin.
It's just too on the nose. They were like... all right. Well, oh, here's the last thing I was going to say. First of all, do you know where the chart came from? Because that sounds similar to the closing credits of The Big Short that Adam McKay made. They had all kinds of graphics exactly like that. Although I don't know if they had the part about
the, I think it has like a bibliography, but
yeah,
like
yeah.
It has. What am I footnotes? Trying to say? Yeah, like it says where it comes from.
A thesis statement?
I don't know what I'm saying, but I don't remember it.
Divided time. Paragraphs?
Like it's
excellent capitalization. But here's the other thing I was going to say about that fight with that guy is that guy went on to be an MMA fighter.
Oh, so
and
you helped him with his career.
Well, but here's the thing. He was terrible. He lost every fight he was in.
Because he would go to the wrong location.
No, but one of my friends who sadly has since died, who I went to high school with, said stayed very close friends with him over the years. And he said to him once, and this guy was also an MMA guy, because realize when we came out of school in the 40s, MMA was still illegal. It was against the law back then. John McCain was saying this would be the end of civilization if people were allowed to.
You had to get your hooch.
We had to go to the Lindy Hop. But anyway, these guys both were fighting smokers, you know, illegal fights as MMA fighters. Anyway, my friend said that he said to this other guy one time who had lost every fight, he was like, and this was, you know, 30 years after we got out of high school. So it was 1973. And he said to this guy, he goes, why are you doing this to yourself? You're beating up your body and you're not ever
Sean Conroy.
No, he said, he goes, you've never won a fight. And the guy goes, I beat the shit out of Sean Conroy freshman year of high school.
No, he didn't.
Yes. Wow. So he was still holding on to that, you know? And I was like, first of all, he did not beat the shit out of me.
He got one punch. He
punched me in the face once.
Yeah.
Which is not a beating.
Wow. But you
so anyway,
quite
that was
an impression on him and his life.
I just thought that was so weird and hilarious. Like, what? That's your big victory in life?
Yeah.
Because I think ultimately, by the time we graduated – you know, when I was a freshman, I was like 80 pounds and, you know, 4 feet tall. And by senior year, I was 6'1", 80 pounds. So anyway, he was still resentful of that for some reason. Here's my next question.
Okay.
We don't have to get too far into this because it's a little sensitive. Have you heard about the lonesome loser beaten by the Queen of Hearts every time? No. Have you heard this story in The New Yorker about comedian Hasan Minhaj?
No. I mean,
not enough to get into it.
I just was online and saw that a lot of people were talking about Hasan. And I was like, oh, I should. How we've talked about before, I was like, I should figure out what like they're referencing, but I didn't get there yet. So what is that?
Well, here's what's going on is that
he said something about anthrax or like that's the thing about these sources that are just people tweeting about something that they are tweeting about that it's right. Like, I don't know what is true and what isn't.
Well, apparently he doesn't either, because what was in this New Yorker article. And obviously Hasan has done very well. He had his show Patriot Act on, I think it was on Amazon or Hulu or maybe Roku or
Apple.
Tubi. Is it Tubi or Tubi? Anyway.
Quibi.
But, you know, so he had his show and he did have, he was on the second season of The Morning Show on Apple TV and... And I knew him. I don't know if you knew him in the stand-up scene here in L.A. And I liked Hasan. I mean, I don't know him. I haven't seen him in a long time. I probably would still like him if I saw him. But he was always very nice to me, which is why I like people. It's why I would have pushed that MAGA guy off a cliff. And apparently in two of his specials, one of which was an off-Broadway show, he tells a number of stories about stuff that has happened in his life. For example,
getting punched in the face.
For example, he got an envelope in the mail after he started the, sorry, I'm very sick.
Are you really?
I don't know what's going on. Something is not right. But onward Christian soldiers. He got an envelope in the mail and he opened the envelope and there was a white powder inside and the white powder spilled on his daughter. And so he had to take his daughter to the emergency room and they had to check and see if it was anthrax and it was really scary. And then his wife said to him, this was after he started doing the not the Patriot Act. Is it the Patriot Act or is it?
No,
I'm trying to remember what the, is it the Cheesecake Factory or Cheesecake right. Factory? Anyway, this was after he started that show. And so clearly there was a connect. And so his wife was like, it's fine for you to say whatever you want on stage, but if you get our family involved in that, I will leave you. And this was in his show. He talked about this incident on stage. And what came out in this article is it's all made up. None of it is true. He fabricated this.
Okay.
And there was a bunch of other stuff like that where he told these stories as if they were true and real things that
had happened. But he was doing hypotheticals?
I don't know what he was doing. What he said he was okay. doing was I was getting at the emotional truth of the experience without necessarily saying these details are all – I mean, he was saying the details were all real. So I guess here's my question to you. Mm-hmm. Because I talked about this yesterday with another podcast. With my college friends, and they were like, he's a comedian. He should say whatever he wants. Who cares? It's just comedy. And it's like – I feel like that's not exactly right because yeah. he's presenting it as if he really experienced this. Like you can tell the difference when a comic is making something up versus right. when they are presenting something as if it was something that really happened in search of a larger point, you know?
I totally agree. Like, what came to mind immediately is like Zach Galifianakis. Like, he says, like, his jokes are goofy in a way that you're like, that didn't happen, but you're still laughing. Like, you're never, it's not like, his humor isn't coming from like, I'm ripping myself open and being so vulnerable that that's where the comedy is coming from.
Right.
So like, yeah, it's a weird thing to do. Cause he could have even like, again, I haven't watched the special, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But what we were saying, before, like, he even could have discussed all of that and framed it as a hypothetical.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, it scares me that this could happen.
What if I got an envelope? Do you know what my wife's reaction would be? You know? And obviously, I'm not talking about, like, an envelope from a college accepting his admissions application. Like, I mean, an anthrax.
Right. But I haven't read the article or seen the special. So it's, like, right. A little bit tough to fully talk. But it does feel like his humor sounds like it's trying to come from, like, look at how real this is. Mm-hmm. And here's the joke that I'm mining from this, like, real pain. Mm-hmm. And then for it not to be, it's strange.
Right. And I'm not even – I mean, we don't even have to talk about him because, like you said, you haven't read the article and you don't know the specifics. And I have read the article and I don't know the specifics. I have no retention. Mm. But the question I have is, what is the line? Is there a line? And what is the line? And what should be – what should be the penalty if you cross the line as a comic? But, you know, and I'll give credit to Jim Coughlin, a comic out here in LA who's a super nice guy. I probably could have thought of this on my own, but I just read a post he did on Facebook where he said basically Richard Pryor got on stage and talked about lighting himself on fire when he was smoking cocaine because that really happened to him. And he got tons of comedy out of this terrible situation, but also was talking about a real experience. Woody Allen got on stage and talked about a moose that he creased with a bullet and went to a costume party with him where he was dressed as a moose. And the moose did very well, mingled, scored, you know. And it's like nobody was ever like, oh, that's a real – that really happened. It was very clear. I know we're not supposed to talk about Woody Allen, but I'm talking about him from 50 years ago when he was doing stand-up.
No, I was just scared of what
– No.
What it was vulnerable thing Woody Allen was going to talk about.
I got an envelope in the mail, and it was filled with a white powder. And I said, what is this? But anyway, you never for a second were like, oh my God, this really happened.
He
tried to shoot this moose and then he put it on the hood of his car and then it woke up and went to a costume party with him. Like that just.
Yeah. How did it come to be that people know that these are not true stories?
Well, that's what's interesting to me. And I don't know what the answer to that is, but I was like, somebody must have gotten in touch with a reporter and said, this guy is lying about a bunch of shit.
Oh.
And the reporter was like, let me look into it and found a bunch of shit that was not true. I do know that there was a piece of it that was he told a story about his prom date, his senior prom, and how he showed up to the house to pick her up. And she had another guy there to take her to the prom because her family said she couldn't be seen with brown people. And this was a real woman whose photo he showed in his Broadway show, blurred out, but she claims not blurry enough to not identify her. And people knew who she was and started coming after her online and, you know, all kinds of problems. And her version of the story, of course, is completely different from his. And so maybe there was something in that led to this reporter getting involved. But I don't know. I just thought it was interesting because, you know, as I said before, I was working on this new one-person show, and the old one-person show I did, I was so specific about this really happened and this is when it happened. And, you know, and it's like, as I was writing the newer show, I was like, I think it would be okay to condense events and not to make anything up, but just for expeditiousness.
Like both of those things could happen in the same
a week apart. Yeah. Like whatever. So anyway, check out that New Yorker article, 'cause I think it is
that's
worth
really
reading.
Interesting.
Also, I will say that fight I was talking about when I was in high school never happened.
Well, that's also what freaks me out. And maybe it also explains why I don't do more autobiographical type things, is like, I don't trust my brain. Like, that story scares me that I would tell a story thinking it was true. And then if somebody fact checked it, I'd be like, oh, sorry. Like, that's how I remembered it. Right. I don't know. Like, there's also that. Like, brains are strange, and
oh, you got that right.
And they store information. Like, I stored the wrong start time for today.
We don't need to get into that because you were half an hour late and I was on time.
Right. We said this time or this time.
And I said this time, and you said, "Oh, you mean that other time?"
Yeah. My brain just was like.
Brains are tricky things.
I truly was like, I could have been here for easily.
Yeah.
But I had like. Yeah.
No, as I said to you, I've done that a million times. Like, I used to not have that problem when I had I mean, we've probably talked about this, but
calendar.
Yeah, like a leather organizer where I wrote things down. Mm-hmm. Now, forget it.
You can still do that.
I can. But it's very old-fashioned.
But old-fashioned is like hip again.
Right. Well, you know, I will write down when I have to go to the Lindy Hop and, you know, I like Ike. sorry. We always start the show with a segment that we like to call Checking In. So let's start today with Amber.
Yeah, I went to the movies last night with Jeff, and we went and saw the newest Hercule Poirot movie.
Hercule. Monsieur Poirot, the little gray cells, speaking of strange brains.
It's called A Haunting in Venice. And it wasn't even like, oh my God, I have to see that. I just felt like not being at home and seeing a movie. And that felt like the best option of what was out. Mm-hmm. And I like a whodunit. And Tina Fey's in it. And so it ended up being exactly what I wanted. Like, I can't say it was an incredible film, but it takes place in Venice, and we happened to have like an IMAX theater. So it was just like beautiful shots of Venice. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is fun. And then a lot of it was like candlelit. Like, it was very, the exact mood I wanted. And how I described it to Jeff is like autumnal without being scary. Like, it had like candlelit and darkness and like a whodunit, but there was like no
gore. It was like Halloween adjacent.
Yes. Well, it took place on Halloween, mm-hmm. but that is not what I
wanted.
The entire row next to us was, I want to say, like 10 or 11 13-year-old boys. They were acting like 13-year-old boys, and so it's just funny to think that like they're super into Kenneth Branagh, like, mm-hmm. But I because Jeff was like, what the fuck were they doing there?
Well, if they were 13-year-old boys acting like 13-year-old boys, I assume they were just punching each other in the face the whole time.
Well, like joking, like getting up, running around. If one left to go to the bathroom and PS like would run into my leg like hard every single time. When they came back, their friends would be like, okay, so the sister, like out loud explaining everything they missed. And but I was like, I think I know what it is. It was AMC, and you can get like a Stubbs cards, you pay a certain amount and then you can see
whatever.
And so I'm sure this is them just not wanting to be home on a Saturday night. And
right.
They're like, sure, we'll see that movie. But mm-hmm. it's just funny to picture 13-year-olds watching like a period piece, not violent, like adult.
Dude, it's that one about the Belgian detective with the mustache.
Exactly. Well, like there was an hour of previews, but one of them was the new Emma Stone, like she plays a robot thing.
Not anyway, familiar.
But Mark Ruffalo is in it. And out loud, they're like, oh, it's the Hulk! And I was like, you guys aren't old enough to be here. But then Jeff and I really had fun imagining, like, what if that's, like, what if Kenneth Branagh core is like a really big thing in teenage.
Well, this is, I think this is his third Hercule Poirot movie, isn't it?
It is. And I realize I don't think I ever saw the second one. I saw the first one.
It was I've on never seen any of them.
The first one's on a train. I think the second one's on a ship.
Plane? The third one is on a plane in Spain. Stays mainly in the rain.
But it was super fun. Yeah.
You liked the movie.
It was exactly what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Like I want to say that so clearly because it wasn't exactly an amazing, perfect movie.
Right.
It was exactly what I wanted.
I mean, I read all those books when I was a kid. I loved Agatha Christie mysteries. So I definitely would get a kick out of it. And I definitely saw, I'm trying to remember. I know Peter Ustinov was Poirot on like Masterpiece Theater or something. But then I think there was somebody else who did it back when I was a kid, like in the 1920s, when we used to see the moving pictures down at the speakeasy.
Uh-huh. Well, and Kenneth, he directs these.
Right.
And he stars in them, which is a lot. But there's one shot that I can't stop thinking about. So because it was a Halloween, there's like a Halloween orphan party is how it starts. In Venice.
Ugh, that sounds awful.
I know. And so there, and it's also
who
like,
wants to come to the? Oh no, it's Venice. Who wants to come to a Halloween orphan party? Everyone here have no parents.
Well, that was the other funny thing is, it's the 40s, and so they kept I'm showing familiar. Up like. Playing games, and it was just like, oh, it was just like a piece of wood with like a rope tied to it. It was just tough stuff.
Now you flip it the coin.
But one of the games was bobbing for apples.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where Hercule
Poirot, the little like, gray cells,
he initially was like standoffish, and then he was like, I need to. This is not giving away anything, but he's like, I want to enjoy life. And so he went to go bob for apples.
That would be hard on his mustache, I think.
And he's like a double-decker mustache.
Yeah.
Like it's like his mustache has a mustache. but I guess it's explained later why this is. But the shot is from inside the bowl. So you just see like Kenneth Branagh like coming at the camera for too long. Like I think out loud I was like, enough. Like we don't need this shot, Kenneth.
That's some Breaking Bad shit. Like that's what they used to do on Breaking Bad all the time was like from inside the sink you see, you know. Well, good for him. I mean, he is turning Hercule Poirot into the new Avengers, like just doing movie after movie. Yeah.
Well, and Tina Fey is in this one. And
not a fan
of her.
Just kidding. I love Tina Fey.
No, I love Tina Fey too. She was okay. Like it felt like they wrote the part as like a Tina Fey type. And so then she got it, but she might not have the acting. I don't know. I just felt her acting the whole time. Like right. I was like worried for her where I could see like a Toni Collette playing Tina Fey, like knocking it out of the park. You know what I mean? Because she's supposed to be a little like sarcastic. Like she was supposed to be Tina Fey-ish.
Could we do Shelley Duvall playing Toni Collette playing Tina Fey? Oh my God, you just destroyed your own computer.
Yeah, we can do that.
Folks, that's called a spit take. That's a classic comedy bit. If you have a moment, look up Martin Short's version of the spit take on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Yeah, last week we were talking about why people don't like him. We're all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And this week we're down on Tina Fey. No, I love Tina Fey. I've told this story before.
I love Tina Fey.
When I did my one-man show in New York and I was like going to do another one, I asked Amy Poehler, like, will you direct this show? And of course she was like, I have no interest in doing that.
I am going to be very famous in 5 seconds.
but she was like, you should talk to my friend. And her friend that she wanted me to talk to was Tina Fey, and I never
did
it.
Holy crap. You should have talked to her.
I should have talked to her.
You could have been on 30 Rock.
Such a life littered with missed opportunities. So Hercule Poirot two thumbs up.
Well, it was just – it was so autumnal.
That's such a funny word to describe a movie. All right. I can't wait till the next Miss Marple movie comes out, because that was another of Agatha Christie's detectives. Miss Marple, just an old lady drinking tea who would figure everything out. All right. Well, it's interesting that you bring up movies, because I want to talk about a movie that I saw last night. And this is where I get to the fact that I need your help.
Oh, okay.
The movie I saw last night was a movie called Barbie.
Uh-oh. You're wearing pink.
I'm wearing pink.
Okay. I'm like scared. I'm crossing my fingers.
I did not care for it.
Oh, no.
I did not like it. I wanted to like it. I knew that everybody liked it. Mm-hmm. I gave it 2 Rotten Tomatoes down.
It wasn't autumnal enough.
No, not at all autumnal enough.
No, that's a very summary movie. Okay, what didn't you like about it?
I felt like it was very preachy and not particularly funny. For the most part, I knew where the jokes were, but I was like, that's not that funny. And I also was confused by, and I mean, I'm sure we've talked about this, but like my big thing about sitcom stuff, because I teach all these pilot classes, is story stuff. I'm always obsessed with story. And in this movie, I felt like I was just like, what is the story here? Is it Barbie going to the real world? Is it this mother who doesn't get along with her daughter and they're going to connect over their doll? Is it what's happening right now? You know, is it Will Ferrell trying to press a button on the elevator? Like, what's the story here? I felt bad. I felt like a hashtag online bad feminist, you know, because I didn't like it. I didn't love it. I didn't even like it, you know? So sorry about that, ladies.
It's okay. It's not for you.
Right. That's what I sort of was feeling like, was like, if I was a, hammer, I'd hammer in the evening. No. If I was a woman, I would probably feel totally differently, because I would be like, yes, that is true. Life is harder for women and it shouldn't be. And I'm not saying that's not true and that it shouldn't be. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't like knock me old socks off, you know? And I was wearing sandals, so it would not have been that hard to knock them off.
Oh, you're wearing sandals and socks.
Yeah.
That's hip right now. I think humor is very subjective and very personal, because like I saw it with my girlfriends and we were scream laughing the mm-hmm. entire time. Mm-hmm. But also I'm like the same age as Greta Gerwig. So a lot of the references are like sort of laser beam.
Right in your sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't understand any of the references. I don't get references. I'm not a reference guy. I was talking about this yesterday because I was talking to my friend who has unfortunately had some difficult stuff happen. And she was talking about how people always talk about, you know, the dogs who sense your emotional state and they like come over and lick your tears off your face. And she was like, that is not happening with my dog. My dog is just like on the couch hanging out. And I said, yeah, your dog is just on the couch reading Kristen Lovren's Daughter. And, you know, that's just an old book that's been around forever. It's like way too long. It's three volumes. It's, you know, just such a random. And she goes, I don't know what that is, but that's the perfect reference for that joke. And I was telling her that I read recently online some comment from somebody about some appearance I made on some podcast, not this one, but they were like, I think Sean Connery is really funny, but his references are like he's from a different planet. Like, I don't know what he's talking about most of the time. And it's like he's lived a different life from anyone I've ever met.
And you're like, thank you.
I was like, fair enough. I'll take it. But anyway, I did not love Barbie. And I thought they were great. I thought Margot Robbie and whoever the guy was.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Played Ken was very
Ryan
good.
Ryan Gosling is an American treasure. I thought every single choice he made was hilarious and incredible.
Yeah, he was great. But I just. You know, and there's that whole speech that America Ferrera makes mm-hmm. in the middle. And I'm like, okay, this is all, I get it. But like, why is she, I don't know. I want to say I feel like I missed something, but I know I didn't miss anything. So I felt guilty. I felt disappointed with my perception of the movie. I was like, oh God, I should like this more because everybody loves it. But, you know, then again, when you said Les Mis before, you saw Les Mis, mm-hmm. I was going to ask, did you end up giving it a standing ovation at the end?
I think I did, but yeah. I think everyone does for every.
Right. So I saw it on Broadway. I saw it on Broadway and they gave it a standing ovation and I refused to stand up for it.
Because I was like,
it was okay. It wasn't the best thing I've ever seen.
That's incredible.
I could not betray my own sensibilities and give it a standing ovation because I think a standing ovation should be very special for something,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Les Mis, it was my first time seeing it at all. Did we talk about this? I can't remember.
I don't remember either.
I don't think so.
Have we ever talked about anything?
No. But I had never seen Les Mis. Like, that was just
corner of your musical theater history.
Exactly. And so I'd never seen it. I'd never seen the movie. So I wasn't familiar with even what the plot was. I thought the plot was a man like is struggling and his sister's dying. So he steals bread and then a cop chases him for stealing that bread. Sort of like the rest of the show. It's sort of a chasey adventure, different places show. Mm-hmm. And then the show opened and like the first line was, I'm getting out of prison for stealing bread to save my sister. And I was like, I don't know where we're going.
Are you sure you didn't see Les Mis 2?
Yeah, I know. But so that was really funny to me that I was like, anything could happen.
And Les Mis 2, lamer iser.
The name is appropriate. Like, they are just miserable.
It was a very difficult time, yes.
Miserable.
France was not a fun place at that time.
Mm-mm. Yeah. But the music is just, like, the definition of rousing. You know, like, I was like, me too. I don't know what you're fighting for, but me too.
I will join in your parade.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to be master of the house, you know. I'm trying to remember other. I don't remember any other. That's all I remember from that show. But yeah, anyway, I
feel like you want me to argue you into liking Barbie, and
yeah, why won't you tell me?
It's how not to like my it? Style. Like mm-hmm. you're allowed to not like things, and I'm allowed to not like.
I don't
like
think
things.
So. I don't think okay. so.
I hear what you're saying about the America Ferrara. That isn't like my favorite part of the movie, but I also have read a bunch of think pieces about it that helped me accept it more. That because it feels so strangely like feminism 101. Mm-hmm. But to keep in mind that she is not talking to the audience, she's talking to Barbie, who hasn't experienced what it's like to be a woman or any of these things before. So they are all new concepts and ideas.
Yeah, I get that. But like, why should I have to read a bunch of think pieces to understand a movie? You know, I've never thought about that before. Maybe I should write a think piece about that. But I do get irritated when people are like, you have to read this thing to know what this thing is, you know, and I know you're not saying that, but I felt like I was being preached to in that moment, you know? And then I also was confused because it felt like it had like six different endings at the end. Mm-hmm. Like they just kept going on and like, and this thing happens and then, you know, the big dance number, and then Carla from Cheers is there. Spoiler. And then
it's been out quite some time and it's made $1.4 billion. Well, I think
people still get angry when you talk about, you know, Carla what happened Cheers. In High Noon with Gary Cooper. They're like, don't tell me what happens at 12 o'clock. Okay. All I'll say is there's a shootout. But anyway, I that's it. That's it. All right. Let's, it's time for a segment on the show that we like to call Parting Shots. So let's start today, as we often do, at least 50% of the time, with Amber.
Yes. I think that I might accidentally be microdosing mushrooms. I got
whoops.
I mean, maybe not. But I got I think because I'm not drinking, I got served some sort of ad about like a wine alternative. So it's just like
beer.
It helps you,
by the way. We are America's favorite sober podcast.
Yes, I don't know about that. I don't know if we
America's favorite sober podcast.
We are a sober podcast. Yeah, the legal team is like,
guys, you can't say you're America's favorite because you're not. You're not. They don't even like you. Nobody likes you guys. How could you be a favorite of someone if they don't even like you? Look, I'm just legal, but I'm just trying to give you advice about how to, you know. Anyway, do you guys want to play golf this weekend?
But yeah, I got served this like wine alternative and it's like an herbal mixture.
I've seen that. I've seen that. And I've been tempted to buy it. So you're saying there's something in there?
Well, it's supposed to like wind you down at the end of the night and also have like heart-friendly antioxidants, like things that you would get in a glass of wine. So I went,
which is a lie, by the way. It's not good for your heart. Wine is not good for your heart. That's bullshit.
Yeah, I know.
I know you do. I'm saying it for our sober podcast listeners.
For Barbie.
Yes. Barbie doesn't know that wine isn't good for your heart. So even though I'm saying it as if I'm saying it to you, I'm really saying it to Barbie.
So I went to the website. Anyway, I ended up getting a package deal of like, it's called Chill the Fuck Out Herbs. And then,
yeah, man,
and then stop your whining herbs. And so the wine one is for the evening, and that's the wine replacement. And I've been putting it in like tart cherry juice, and it looks and feels like wine. And then but the other one, the chill the F out.
Like, oh. It looks and feels like wine. You're like, it looks like wine. Feels like wine. But it still looks and feels like wine.
Just it like pouring. I don't know why that's so funny to me. But the chill the F out one.
Thank you for not saying it again.
I think that's, it's called Chill the F Out. Like, I think that is the actual name. It has, anyway, I make it with tea and like a little bit of milk, and it tastes really good. It's kind of like hot cocoa. But I was working from home last week because of the COVID outbreak. And then there was one day that I drank that Chill the F Out tea in the afternoon. And then I like went to write an email, and I was like, oh.
I'm too chilled out.
I was like, what?
I gotta warm up.
In this tea. And like one of, like, it's reishi mushrooms. So I don't think it's like
hallucinogens.
No, but something's happening. Right. Like, it's like, right. So I went into Jeff. I was like, I think I'm accidentally on mushrooms right now. It was like 2 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Oops, me too.
But it does chill you out. I had some right before this call.
Perfect. But, also, so yeah. I like how you said it. I make it with tea and milk, and I put that in, and it tastes just like cocoa. And I'm like, could you maybe just make cocoa?
But then I wouldn't be on mushrooms.
It's true. That's true.
But yeah, that was funny. Like, it's great. I've decided for weekends. I don't know. I truly sent out an email to like important people that said ass disgust. ASS disgust. Not good. That's not good, Sean.
Disgust, DISGUST.
Yes. End of email sent.
What's going on with Amber? She apparently has a lot of ass disgust. Yeah, you don't want to send important emails to important people about how much you're disgusted by asses. They want you to think that you like asses. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so I don't know. I might be like poisoning myself. I don't know what's going on. I'll keep you abreast.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, now I don't drink, but I'm just like addicted.
Just send me a coded text message that just says ass disgust, and I'll know what it means. Oh, she's tripping on mushrooms again.
But I also want to get like fully a pointy hat and like a cauldron. Like, just like I've got my herbs.
Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble.
Just leaning into it, my witch era. That's my parting shot.
I've never in my life tried mushrooms or any kind of hallucinogens. I need to do that at some point.
Who knows, but I have read that they are the only drug that has no negative side effect whatsoever. And it
Definitely true. That's like where I read that wine is good for your heart. Like, if if one glass of wine is good for your heart, like five has to really,
if you have like a couple bottles,
yeah.
You'll never
get God, my again. Heart is in great shape, apparently. But yeah, I wanna try that at some point. So we'll see. We'll see if I ever do. Ketamine. Have you ever had ketamine?
No. Have you?
No, I have not. There's a lot of drugs I haven't done. I mostly have not done most drugs. I have done some, but not most.
Others.
Most I have not.
Yes, same, I would say.
But I just heard somebody talking about ketamine yesterday. And apparently it's very in like the tech bro culture at this point. That everybody's on ketamine. I don't even really know what it does, you know.
I just know about K-hole. Like if you have too much.
What did you call me?
If you have too much, I know that you just like are in like darkness. Mm-hmm. You're just like frozen. Right. But maybe that's a lie. And
I've had that happen with tequila though. So, you know, yeah. That's not.
That's a teal.
What did you call me? Yeah, I know I'm making a new drink called Chill the A-Hole Out. all right, here's my parting shot. I have two things. One is I went to a thing the other day. My friend Billy is leaving town to go back to Florida. Basically, he's packing it up and going back to Florida. So shout out to Billy, who doesn't listen to this show, but he's been on the show. Mm-hmm. We had Billy on at one point.
Oh, you're going to miss him.
Yeah, yeah. And so he had like a get together on his last night, which I went to. But by the time I was able to even get anywhere near Billy, he was leaving. Like I never got to really talk to him that night. But the reason I bring it up is because there was a bunch of other people I hadn't seen in a long time there. I had not seen them there. I had not. They were there.
You had seen them, but not there.
No.
Okay. They were there, but invisible.
Writing is so hard. Where's Kenneth Branagh when you need him? But anyway, there was a guy there who used to be a person who worked at the theater in New York. Or he still is the same person. He used to work at the theater in New York. And I was leaving and I hadn't even really talked to him. And I was like, hey, man, good to see you. I'll see you soon. And he was like, okay. And I started to walk away and he goes, hey, Sean. I was like, yeah. I turned back around and he goes, you know what? I think REM was better than the Flaming Lips. And it was so funny to me because it was in reference to a music festival we went to like over 10 years ago.
Aww.
And clearly we had been having a discussion about it sometime since then because we saw them on separate nights. We saw REM one night and we saw the Flaming Lips another night. And I just thought that was so funny that that clearly was like dangling in his mind all this
really
time.
Ruminating over it.
Maybe Sean is right. Maybe REM was better than because obviously the Flaming Lips is a big spectacle.
They put
spectacle.
On a show. Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
With naked women and big beach balls rolling around and all kinds of stuff. But REM played in the rain and it was just a wild, cool experience to watch them because it was an outdoor amphitheater and Michael Stipe just took his shoes off and was running around the stage singing all the great REM classics. Wow.
Losing My Religion.
52nd Street. Was that Michael Piano Man?
The tap number.
No, Billy Joel has the song.
Oh, 42nd Street is what I'm thinking of.
So that's one thing. Here's another thing that I just think is funny and, you know, we'll see if anything, I mean, it's going to be great for him. But as you know, I made this short film, which I swear to God is on the verge of being done like very, very soon. I think I may be going tomorrow to listen to the final sound mix.
That's exciting.
At which point it will then be sent back to the editor who will set it up so that we can upload it to Vimeo and post it on the website that we can submit it to festivals. Now I have to figure out how I'm going to pay for all these festivals and
pay to
go to all these festivals, right? but the two people in it are this actress from The Good Doctor and Matt Walsh from This Is You gave me this information. I was like, how did I forget that part? But
I was like, holy
yeah,
shit,
Amber. Stop. So Amber sent me this thing this week that Matt Walsh has just been announced as a cast member of this season's Dancing with the Stars.
which is pretty big.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, it's great for him, like I said, but also it like it just elevates his profile in terms of it won't just be people who are comedy fans will know who he is. It'll also be people who watch like Selling the OC and Real Housewives of Vladimir County or whatever the, you know, whatever those shows are. And, you know, who knows if that might have – it might redound to the benefit of my short film, which is a very mercenary way to think about it. But, you know, why not? And I saw him on something, TikTok or Instagram or some other video, Grumble or Flibbert. But anyway.
Doc Happy.
It was him with his partner. I think her name is Coco or something like that. And they were talking about what they were going to do this season on the show. And it was, you know, that's Matt cool. is so funny and so charming. And it was exactly that. It was like her sort of interviewing him and him being super funny. So I think he will be
like a fan favorite.
Yeah. It always depends on how long people last on that show, but he just will come across very well, no matter how long he lasts. You know,
that's so cool.
That's very exciting. Cool. All right. Well, that is our show. I am going to go outside and get punched in the face again, which I've been doing for over 40 years. No defense. I don't know what to do. And please like and subscribe to the like and subscribe buttons. Find our podcast on YouTube.
You mean you're probably here.
Some people still listen to it, right? Don't you think some people still listen to the audio version?
Yes.
I think there's still some old-fashioned people in the world who don't understand that there's moving pictures.
It feels like an easier way to listen while like driving or working.
That's the only time I listen to podcasts is when I'm doing something else.
So if you are just dedicated to watching it, which God love you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But you have to really set aside some time.
No. And I get that too, because it's very compelling the way I'm sitting here and the way the you're sitting there, you know, but just think about in all seriousness,
we need to do this in IMAX.
Think about if you did not watch this week's episode that you would miss Amber's spit take.
Which I can't wait to see what it looks like.
Such a classic. Such a comedy classic. I mean, think about the pilot of Friends. There's a great spit take in that. That's another spit take moment.
Think about it.
Yeah. Monica can't believe that the guy said he's got no snap in his turtle. It's a metaphor for his dick.
Okay.
And fucking. Or effing, I guess we say now. Chill the F out.
It's the name of it.
Snapping his turtle is a metaphor for effing. All right. I'm going to get ready to do this. We will see you next time on The Long Shot. Thanks, everybody.